Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to yet another episode. We are back. Hamish Hodder is with me as always, and we are just recovering from actually hanging out with each other for the last 4 or 5 days because myself and some of my family and my girlfriend Tash, we went down to Melbourne and we stayed with Hamish.
Yeah.
So we went to the Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's good fun. Yeah, it's been a while since we've caught up in Melbourne or at all. So yeah, it was good fun. Grand Prix over was it Thursday to Sunday? 4 jam-packed days of sitting in the sun, listening to cars. Yeah, it was good fun.
Yep. Yeah. How are you feeling? Are you fully recovered from it? It's a very tiring. It's a very tiring event, just sitting in the sun for 4 days, and there's a lot of walking as well. Albert Park's a big place. Have you fully recovered? You got a little bit sick as well.
Yeah, I was a little bit sick. Yeah, no, it's it does kind of take it out of you, because especially for me, because I spend like most of my time in my house. So then going and doing 4 days of 20,000 steps a day, or 10,000 steps a day, is it's a big step up. But feeling good this week. I took last week off. I didn't really I did a little bit of work last week, but not a whole lot. So I was kind of, took it as a little bit of a break. So I've been excited to get back into things this week. So it's been good.
Diving back into it.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Well, today we have some quite interesting news, actually. Hamish is going to talk through the Reddit IPO, which I have not really had a look at yet. So that will be interesting to see what you say. We're going to talk about chocolate, the price of chocolate, because you probably noticed the prices of chocolate's quite high at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to talk about the Boeing CEO stepping down and Trump's Truth Social IPO or SPAC merger. We'll talk about that as well, because it's quite interesting. Mm. Quite interesting.
Yeah, and with that said, today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. And as always, thank you to those who have signed up to Seeking Alpha through our link and supporting what we do here on the podcast.
Very good. Yeah, Seeking Alpha is a very handy resource for investors. If you're actually delving into company financials and you're really getting into the nitty gritty and looking at valuation and stuff, Seeking Alpha is very helpful. All right, Hamish, let's move on. The Reddit IPO. What is going on? You're before we start, there are sometimes when we write a story and we say to each other, don't look at the notes because I want to tell you this and get your reaction live. And that's what Hamish said to me about this Reddit IPO. So all I know is that Reddit has had an IPO, but I don't know anything about it. So run me through this, Hamish. Blow my mind.
Yeah, I'm actually excited. You know what? I mean, I'm not a big investor in IPOs. I don't think I've ever invested in an IPO. I don't think you've ever invested in an IPO. We tend to not like newer companies. But I like talking about them because they're often funny and fascinating. But we haven't had that many IPOs recently. I was just looking at US IPOs year by year, because I knew that there was a lot of IPOs during COVID, when there was kind of that tech bubble and there was a lot of new investors getting into the market. Companies tend to like going public when everything is really positive in the market. So I went and looked back. In 2020, there was 480 US IPOs. In 2021, there was 1,035 IPOs in the US. So that's 1,500 IPOs during that kind of COVID period. And to put that in perspective, last year, there was 154 IPOs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you can tell that change in appetite. people that run companies, they want to list their companies when the stock market is at its frothiest so they can get the most bang for their buck, because they are selling shares to the public. So they want to try and sell it for the highest price possible to raise more money, essentially, or to raise the same amount of money, they have to sell less shares so there's less dilution. So that's kind of the thinking behind it. And that's why you can generally track IPOs as a measure of how frothy the market is.
Mm. Yeah, exactly right. And there's been about, I think, 40 IPOs this year so far. So it's kind of tracking the same as on a similar path to last year. Yeah. Most of them are very small companies, but there was, of course, a relatively big one last week, which was Reddit. Reddit, of course, is the social news and forum social network and home to the greatest investor community of all time. Wall Street Bets, which I had a look just before. They now have 15 million members in that subreddit,
which is kind of insane. That's crazy.
Because I remember, I think during the GameStop and AMC hype and all of these short squeezes and all of that, I remember looking at the members and I want to say they were between 3 and 6 million, which was obviously still an enormous amount of members. Yep. But even since then, like in just the space of a couple of years, they've exploded to 15 million members. They're now the 49th largest subreddit on Reddit, on the site, which is kind of insane.
Wow.
If you know a little bit about Reddit, like the top subreddits are, of course, they're just things like television or like technology. So these are like just extremely broad topics, or it'd be like beauty or plants or something, right? So to be 49th on that list as an investor community is kind of insane. It just shows how mainstream, in a way, it really became, which is fascinating.
Is really wild.
Yeah.
Shows you how the rise of the speculative investor.
Yeah, yeah. And it does kind of put in perspective, like, it shouldn't be surprising. Well, I guess it was still surprising, but it was like, it makes sense what happened with GameStop and AMC. It was so public that... it makes sense that, you know, if you get a lot of people interested in making a quick buck, of course, you know, you're going to see stocks like that surge in price. Yeah. So Reddit's planning on, they IPO'd last week. But before their IPO, of course, they had to submit their S1 SEC filing, which is kind of just it's just like the initial filing indicating that they plan on going public. And they give a bunch of information about the business and their plans going forward. So they revealed that the site has more than 100,000 active communities. So 100,000 active subreddits.
Active communities.
Yeah, it's just what they call their kind of subreddit forum pages.
Yep.
They have 73 million average daily active uniques is what they call it. So I probably should have looked up the specific definition, but I'm assuming it's daily active individual accounts or like individual people.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
So probably a similar to daily active user figure, I would presume. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually really surprising. I mean, when you start looking at the other social kind of platforms of the world, it doesn't come anywhere close. But I would not have thought that 73 million people around the world are hopping into or logging into to Reddit each day. I did not know it was that, like, I knew it was popular, but I thought it was popular in kind of like a niche kind of popularity way. But that's actually quite popular.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Me too. And I mean, on a monthly basis, it was even bigger, 267 million monthly active, average monthly active uniques is how they kind of describe it. So yeah, almost 300 million or a quarter billion people using it at least once a month. They have a billion cumulative posts as well as kind of another metric that they reported there. Although I don't know if that really means anything.
Probably not.
I think with users, you can kind of compare it to like world population or people with the internet. But like posts, my brain just has nothing to compare it to. Like I know it's a big number, but like it doesn't really... It's like when YouTube says how many videos they are posted or uploaded every day. It's like, that's a big number, but I don't know if that is a good number, if you know what I mean. Like I'd like to compare the total posts on Reddit to like the total posts on Facebook or something. Like what's Facebook at?
Facebook would be a trillion or something. Twitter, Facebook, all those. Yeah. Even how many, I don't even know how many videos go up to YouTube every day, but it'd be a lot as well.
No, it's an insane amount. Yeah. So anyway, they gave a bit of a detail about how they plan to make money on the site. So the first
Wait, do they make money?
They do. So currently they run advertising. So that was they mentioned okay. they currently run advertising, and we'll get into some of their financials as well. And they said they obviously plan on continuing to expand their advertising. And then they listed two other new revenue sources that they're going to be doing in the future. The first was data licensing. So they specifically said they're planning on selling website data to companies for training AI models, which a lot of people on Reddit weren't too happy about. The idea that some of their forums and conversations, even though they're public conversations, but the fact that they're actually specifically planning on farming those to... they didn't mention OpenAI specifically, but companies like OpenAI building things like ChatGPT to train those models. They think that can be a very large revenue source, although maybe it's just them trying to find a way to tack AI into into their S1. I don't know if that actually is a meaningful revenue source. Who knows?
We shall see.
We'll see. And then they also spoke about what they call the user economy, which... is just a fancy way of saying they plan to introduce premium subscriptions for users. So things like, I guess, premium communities and that sort of thing, which currently don't exist on the site.
Paywalled communities. I wonder how that would work.
Yeah.
I don't know. Imagine if you had to pay a monthly membership to be in Wall Street Bets. It'd be something like that, would it?
I think so. And I mean, it makes sense. I mean, people have paywalled communities on Patreon, on YouTube, but even YouTube, you can kind of do it as your channel members. So I could see it maybe working in some respects, but that's basically what they said. But I think advertising is probably going to be their main revenue source for quite a while now, for the foreseeable future. They reported $800 million in revenue in 2023, which is, again, an astounding, a fair bit more than I kind of expected from them.
Yeah, me too.
They're obviously nowhere near the Googles and Facebooks of the world, but still $1 billion for a relatively small site is quite impressive. Although they did report a net loss of $91 million, so they obviously are unprofitable. And I was looking at their financials; they had pretty low expenses except for one line, which was they had $440 million in research and development. And I don't know if I maybe was looking at the wrong SEC filings, but I searched the document and I couldn't find any explanation of what the hell they're spending $400 million on R&D.
That is bizarre.
So if someone knows how they're spending their money on R&D, feel free to let me know. But I couldn't find it. So
$440 million on R&D. Is it getting $440 million better each year? I wouldn't say so. I feel like Reddit doesn't change that much.
No. And I mean, so I don't know. I don't know what they're spending money on. Maybe it's just the nature the nature of their business. They can use R&D as some kind of tax, like they're getting some kind of tax advantage writing things off through R&D. I don't know.
How do they make $804 million in revenue as a small scale social platform? They make a net loss of $91 million. I feel like it's not too hard. And I really don't feel like Reddit has changed all that much over the last little while. No. Maybe I just haven't been keeping up to speed.
It hasn't changed all that much. But yeah, I think the question really lies in what they're spending R&D on. Because if some of that is not necessary spending, like it is really research and development for future revenue growth, then, you know, their margins are very good. Like even if you assumed half of that is like not necessary for their current business, they're 10%+ profit margin, pretty profitable. So I think it depends on what's in the R&D is kind of the big question.
We shall explore further.
Yeah. But my absolute favorite part of reading the S1 filing by far was when we got to the risk factors section. So of course, companies in their annual reports, but also in the S1, they list risk factors that related to the business for investors. And usually you'll see things like, oh, we have 30% of our revenue comes from one client. So if we lose this client, it could be a substantial loss of revenue and profitability.
Natural disasters might take out a manufacturing plant, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, or it's like an airline, like, ooh, quick rises in the price of oil could drastically increase our expenses. That's typically what you see in the risk factors section. For Reddit, they listed the Wall Street Bets Reddit page as a risk factor, which is maybe the most dystopian part of this. So this is a quote. In 2021, the market prices and trading volumes of certain securities, such as GameStop, AMC, and other meme stocks, experienced extreme volatility. This volatility has in part been attributable to atypical retail investor interest expressed on social media sites and online forums such as r/WallStreetBets. Our Class A common stock could experience extreme volatility for reasons unrelated to our underlying business.
So they're actually anticipating or saying a risk factor is that Reddit itself could become the next meme stock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's what that last line says to me. I was wondering, like, if they put Wall Street Bets at risk, I was wondering, oh, do they feel like maybe they might get heavily regulated or something, and that might, because someone kicks up a stink about Wall Street Bets and then that affects their business. But no, it sounds like they're saying that Reddit stock might become swept up in Wall Street Bets and become the next meme stock. What the heck? Yeah. That is bizarre, dude. So, that is bizarre.
So I thought that was really funny. I looked on the Wall Street Bets subreddit just to see if there was anything about the Reddit IPO, because of course there would be. And the top forum was how do you short an IPO?
Interesting.
Clearly,
how did it go? Do you have stats on how the IPO actually went?
We do. So it's been it debuted last week at $34 a share at about a $5.4 billion valuation. By the end of the first day, it had risen over 50% to $50 per share.
Oh,
so
wow.
It surged in the first day. And then earlier this week, actually on Monday, it jumped 30% in a day.
It's
been going very strong since then. So it's now $65 a share with more than a $10 billion valuation. For a company making, what did I say, $700 million in revenue, $100 million loss.
So, it's so bizarre. IPO investors love a loss, don't they? It's like they'll pay a premium for a company that makes no money.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, most IPO, that's the nature of an IPO, right? Like most companies go public because they want to raise capital so they're usually unprofitable. But yeah, you are obviously betting on, in a lot of cases, a miracle happening, because most companies go public unprofitable and they remain unprofitable until they die. So you are obviously betting on them, and you're paying a massive premium above what their current business is. You're paying for the pipe dream that they become, you know, an enormous social media site. Yeah.
And that's why we don't invest in IPOs.
Yeah, pretty much.
Long story short.
Yeah.
Because they are probably one of the most speculative things you can do, because you are like the company does an IPO for no reason. They need the money and then they try and put it towards a growth avenue and then fingers crossed that it works.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
Crazy. So there you go. Man. That's the crazy.
That's the Reddit IPO. Be interesting to see how it goes, of course, over the course of the year. IPOs have been doing terribly recently, especially since the last couple of years. I mean, we've had things like Rivian and Coinbase and Robinhood, right? Like almost everything has unanimously been down 80%+, I think, if it IPO'd in the last couple of years. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues for companies like Reddit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, Hamish, let's go from one IPO to I guess another-ish. Similar to an IPO. It's a listing through a special purpose acquisition company, which is not a traditional IPO, but it still gets a private company public. And we're going to be talking about Mr. Donald Trump's Truth Social. The article here says the share price of Donald Trump's social media company jumped more than 50% minutes after it began public trading under the ticker DJT on Tuesday morning. Trading in the Trump Media and Technology Group was briefly halted amid the rise due to volatility before it resumed around 9:40 a.m. ET. More than 6.5 million shares in Trump Media changed hands by 9:50 a.m.
Wow.
Wow.
That's insane.
The ticker debuted on the NASDAQ. Yeah, this is interesting, actually. The ticker debuted on the NASDAQ stock market nearly 3 decades after the former president used it to launch his publicly traded hotel and casino company to great fanfare in 1995.
Wow.
That stock was, how do you say this word? Ignominiously delisted from the New York Stock Exchange 9 years later.
Wow.
So what actually happened? Well, Trump's media merger with shell company Digital World Acquisition Corp. was completed Monday, allowing it to become publicly traded. Trump Media by mid-afternoon had a market valuation of at least $8.4 billion on an undiluted share basis.
Wow.
So wow.
So Truth.
Where's Owen Wilson? Get him in here.
So where's So Truth Social is valued at basically the same amount as Reddit. That's
I didn't think of that. They are roughly the same.
That's interesting.
It's gone up even more. So yeah, it's roughly the same. What does it say? Trump is the majority shareholder in the company, whose directors include his son, Donald Trump Jr., and other close allies of the former president. So SEC filings show Trump will hold 78.75 million shares in Trump Media, which represents as much as a 69% stake in the company,
wow,
depending on the rate of share redemptions by Digital World Acquisition Corp shareholders. That stake was worth nearly $6 billion on paper on an undiluted share basis, given the share price of $75.57 around 2:30 p.m.
Right.
Wow. So that's a lot of dough all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's financial position has kind of swung around quite a lot recently.
Yeah, well boy does he need it. Didn't he? He just got $250 million fine or something from New York for his real estate, his real estate shenanigans. I guess he'll appeal it, but if it stands as it is, I think it's $250 million, which is a lot of money.
It says here, on its last day of trading Monday after the DWAC ticker, under the DWAC ticker, the company's shares soared more than 35% after New York appeals court decreased from $454 million to $175 million, the amount of a bond Trump would have to post to pause collection on a business fraud judgment while he appeals the case.
Oh, wow. It's half a billion dollars, though. Wow. I thought it was only $250 million here. Half a billion. Wow. Crazy.
Mm. Yeah. Do you want to hear something crazy, though, Hamish? Despite Trump Media's relatively high market valuation, the company, similar to Reddit in some respects, the company reported less than 3.5 million, that's million, not billion, million with an M, 3.5 million in revenue over the first three quarters of 2023.
I thought you were going to say profit.
No, revenue, dude. Revenue, bro.
Oh my God.
That's why this has been so successful for him, because it's even less revenue, so even less profit. A reported loss is more than 10 times that amount. Crazy. Also, here's something funny. The company's website page for financials contains no information.
Mm. That's not a good look.
No, it's
funny.
Not.
This is obviously insane. I mean, we just spoke about, with Reddit, what was it? It was like $700 million in revenue, $10 billion valuation. So that is already insane. If you want to say, what was it? $8 billion market cap of value and 3.5 million in revenue is, I don't know, 1,000 times more insane. So
good luck. That's all I have to say. Good luck.
That's crazy.
If you're buying these shares. Yeah. And spoiler, this article was written after the close on Monday. It says the company's closing price Monday was just under $50 per share. But spoiler, we're now recording this just after the Tuesday trading day. It went up another 16% overnight.
Right.
So, yeah,
that's
pretty
insane.
Crazy.
I was just going to say, I wonder if we'll start to see very quickly Trump sell a bunch of his shares. Because I assume this IPO isn't a coincidence. The timing isn't a coincidence. I presume he's using it as a way to get cash to finance his legal problems. So with the valuation at, what did you say? His stake seems to be worth about $6 billion. And obviously he can't get $6 billion out. If he sold all the shares, he would kill the price. But could he sell 10% of his shares and pull $400-500 million out of this IPO, out of a company that makes no money, $3 million in revenue? Now seems like a pretty good time to do it. Like how much better can the valuation get?
Yeah, I have the answer for you, Hamish.
Yeah.
It says here, Trump is barred by terms of the merger from selling his shares for 6 months.
Wow, okay.
But the company's board could grant him a waiver of that lockup period. So, I mean...
The board that is stuffed with his family. Like
Exactly. So... Okay. Yeah. So while technically on paper, what you're saying can't happen for 6 months, we're talking about Donald Trump here. there's a decent likelihood that he might go to the board, to his kids, and say, "Hey, you want to let old Papa Trump take out some money?
Yeah,
I'll buy you a Lamborghini."
Trump's looking at all these dodgy scam coins and going like, "Step aside, watch this." Yeah. Like, I'll do the ultimate pump and dump.
Hold my beer.
No,
it is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It says Trump's net worth has in recent days shot up by more than $4 billion, bringing his current total to about $6.5 billion, according to Bloomberg.
Crazy.
You know, the funniest, that's all I've really got to say on Truth Social. Like, it's not a company that I follow. But in other news, in other Donald Trump news, Hamish, he's also now selling a Bible in his latest product launch. Donald Trump on Tuesday started promoting a line of pricey Bibles in a partnership with country music star Lee Greenwood, whose song "God Bless the USA" is omnipresent at the former president's political rallies.
Isn't that just wonderful?
You can now buy a Trump Bible for $60, Hamish.
That's sick.
Is it gold? I think I'll get you one. I actually don't. I haven't seen a picture. I'll get you one for your birthday.
Okay.
I'll
thank you. Yeah.
Oh my God. You can just imagine. I'll read you the quote of what Trump said about this Bible. It's so funny because you can just read it, Bill. You can just hear Trump saying this. He says, "All Americans need a Bible in their home, and I have many. It's my favorite book. It's a lot of people's favorite book. Religion and Christianity are the biggest things missing from this country, and I truly believe that we need to bring them back. It's one of the biggest problems that we have. That's why our country's going haywire. We've lost religion in our country."
Good on him. Accurate. You know what? He should have rewritten the entire Bible, like, the way that he speaks. So it's like, when God, you know, like, like, and then there was light, and it was the best light there ever was.
And there never was
better light. It's just all in the
I know that. I was there. I saw it. I personally know that. Wow. I want Trump to do an audiobook of the Bible.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my.
And he just improvs it. Like, he just riffs. He just riffs it. He just reads the okay, Genesis 1:1. Okay. And then he just riffs it.
Yeah. Sorry, I know what this says. So it was a very nice time. It was a very good time in the world. It was a wonderful time. I know, I was there. It was great. And essentially, what happened? I can tell you who wasn't there. Sleepy Joe wasn't there. He had no idea. He wasn't reading the Bible.
The garden had four walls. It was great. All right.
Anyways. So that's the last thing on Donald Trump for this week, Hamish. What do we got next?
Let's talk about chocolate. Especially if you're
why not?
Yeah, it's Easter. It's Easter weekend.
It's Easter.
It's Easter at the moment. Ooh. So you might have been shopping around for some chocolate, some Easter eggs and Easter bunnies, and you might have noticed maybe that chocolate's kind of getting expensive. It's starting to go up a little bit. And there's a good reason behind that, and not a good reason. There's a reason behind it. It's not a positive. It's not a positive thing.
A very good reason behind it.
And unfortunately, it's probably going to get a lot worse. So CNBC reported the world faces the worst supply deficit in decades, with farmers in West Africa struggling against bad weather, disease, and failing trees. Cocoa futures contracts have, we can kind of look at the price of cocoa to see how dramatic this has been recently. So 12 months ago, for a metric ton of cocoa, it was $2,900. Today, it's $9,600 for a metric ton of cocoa, which is a 230% increase in 12 months. Which is pretty it's a pretty big increase. Pretty substantial.
That's insane, dude. That's a very big increase. Well, no wonder chocolate's so flippin' expensive.
Yeah. And it's essentially been caused by what's being described as the worst supply deficit in 60 years. So the International Cocoa Organization has forecast a supply deficit of 374,000 tons for the 2023-2024 season, a 405% increase from a deficit of 74,000 tons in the previous season. So a 400% increase in that deficit in just a year. And it doesn't look like it's going to go away anytime soon. There's actually just, it's really interesting, there's actually just two countries that represent 60% of the global cocoa production market, Ivory Coast and Ghana. And crops in both of those regions have been hit by black pod disease and swollen shoot virus.
Can you explain to me, Hamish, how both of those diseases
work? Yeah, I'm actually an expert in this, so... I'm glad you asked.
Oh, gosh.
No, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what that is. But no, it doesn't sound good. Idea.
But there you go. No, that's terrible, man. That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, it sucks for us because chocolate's more expensive, but I imagine these countries is probably a big part of a lot of people's livelihoods.
Yes. Yes, exactly right. Yeah, so for consumers, this is a, you know, fairly classic supply shock. Another one.
Yeah.
That we've seen our fair share of those in the last couple of years. I'm sure everyone's quite familiar with what a supply shock is now. You know, we're probably going to go ahead and see it in higher prices, of course, for products that have cocoa in them, chocolate. More likely, or very likely alongside higher prices, is shrinkflation, which is rather than increasing prices, the company can keep the price the same or raise them a little bit and then just shrink the size of the product. So you feel like you're still paying the same amount, but you're paying the same amount for less.
I've already seen that starting to happen in my local shopping center.
Yeah.
Some of the blocks of Kit Kat, I can't remember if it's like 170 grams or 190 grams, and then the other one, the newer ones are like 165 grams. It must be 170. It's gone down to 165, and they just dunk, slowly get smaller.
But
crazy.
Yeah, insane. And for some of the bigger brands, you actually might not have noticed price increases yet or substantial price increases yet. And that's because big companies who depend on particular commodities, so like airlines depending on oil, or in this case, chocolate companies depending very heavily on cocoa, big companies will use what's called hedging to protect them from sharp price changes. And the way they do that is with futures contracts. So it's futures contracts are a derivative, pretty similar to options if you know how options work. Except, as is in the name, an option contract gives you the option but not the obligation to buy something at a fixed price. A futures contract is just a fixed contract. So it's saying, I will buy this commodity from you at this fixed price over this period or by this date or something like that.
Yep.
So it's
essentially locking in prices, right?
Exactly right. So a company will do this and maybe they'll miss out on slightly better costs if the commodity price had gone down. But if there is a sudden increase, they're good for a little while because they've got these contracts going out months or maybe even a year or something like that, where they've kind of locked in what their expenses will be for this particular commodity.
Yeah, it works well for suppliers. It works well for both ends because the people that need the cocoa have got the supply locked in at a certain price. And also for those producing, they have also got a price locked in so they can go, well, I'm not going to be subject to price fluctuations. Obviously, it wouldn't help them so much now when the price goes up suddenly if they've already locked in a whole bunch of sales. But, you know, generally speaking, it helps them iron out the kinks and it gives them a little bit of security in their business.
Mm, yep. And so that's why you might not have seen prices go up all that much yet. But there's only so long that a company could have been hedging for. Eventually, if the problem or the price of the commodity just stays elevated, the hedging effects run out, right? They run out of contracts that they've set in place at lower prices. And that seems to be the case with this particular problem. Paul Jules, commodity analyst at Rabobank, expects consumers to start seeing big price increases by early 2025. And he kind of, in the CNBC article, they kind of spoke about some of the reasons why it doesn't look like this problem is going to go away. Farmers in Ivory Coast, which is one of the big producers, have actually been exiting the industry based on this kind of crisis.
Right.
The government actually sets fixed prices for farmers, so they haven't been able to benefit at all from the increased prices. So the government is actually in control in Ivory Coast of the price of cocoa, essentially, for the farmers. So they haven't been able to benefit, even though they've obviously suffered the consequences of the problem. So the result has been just a lot of farmers are just changing what crops they farm to more lucrative crops, such as rubber is another one that they kind of do in that region. So it looks right. like it actually could be a very long time before supply is kind of back to where it once was. Not just because of the disease, but because you've actually got farmers in some of these big production countries switching out of those markets because
they're bailing.
Because why would they? Why would they stick around if they're not going to benefit from the prices when they're high?
Yep.
Why would they stick around, deal with all of the problems and the costs only for when it's better for the prices to come back down and they're back where they were previously? They may as well go into a more lucrative crop. So it makes perfect sense why it's happening, but it means that for consumers, it's we're probably going to have this see higher chocolate prices for the foreseeable future.
Mm. Yeah, crazy. That's really interesting. That is exactly a supply shock. Yeah, we shall see.
Yep.
Although it's a first world problem, but it's not good with Easter coming up.
No, it's not. Yeah, I can't say I'm a big consumer.
I mean, it's much worse for these farmers. It's much worse for these farmers. But in my bubble of the universe, I want cheaper chocolate.
But how will the Easter Bunny afford it?
Exactly. We're going to bankrupt the Easter Bunny. No. Oh, Easter's ruined.
Yeah.
All right, Hamish. I just want to quickly finish off with this story about Boeing and then we'll bounce out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Boeing CEO has stepped down. Did you hear about this?
I did see this, yes. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, so... Yeah, Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun will step down at the end of 2024 in part of a broad management shakeup for the embattled aerospace giant. Larry Kellner, chairman of the board, will not stand for re-election at Boeing's annual meeting in May, Boeing said on Monday. He will be succeeded as chair by Steve Mollenkopf, who has been a Boeing director since 2020 and is a former CEO of Qualcomm. Mollenkopf will lead the board in picking a new CEO, Boeing said. Stan Deal, president and chief executive of Boeing's commercial airplanes unit, is leaving the company effective immediately. Moving into his job is Stephanie Pope, who recently became Boeing's chief operating officer after previously running Boeing Global Services. And as we know, the departures come as airlines and regulators have been increasing calls for major changes at the company after a host of quality and manufacturing flaws on Boeing's planes. Scrutiny intensified, of course, after the January 5 incident when a door plug blew out of a nearly new Boeing 737 MAX 9 minutes into an Alaska Airlines flight.
It's crazy. It's crazy that was a new plane.
Yeah,
like that's really obviously it's bad that it happened. Full stop. But if it was a really old plane, at least you're like, okay, there's some explanation for the fault. But there's there's no excuse anyway. But there's absolutely negative excuse to make a brand new plane, not brand new, but relatively new, and to have that happen is crazy.
Yeah. It's not like the door's been open and closed like 5 million times over a 30-year lifespan, and it's now kind of deteriorating a bit, you know?
Yeah exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really don't have much to say on this. That is the management shakeup. Boeing's not actually one that I follow. They do have a bit of a moat, although that moat definitely might be under threat at the moment. Yeah. But I think even still, like, through the original crisis with the 737 MAX, their orders just didn't go down. The orders were just postponed. They just had to wait to make them. So they still do have that moat, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's what, Boeing or Airbus? They're your two options, really. Nah, there's a few more, but
yeah, they've kind of,
but really the predominant ones.
They definitely have substantial moats, and I think the fact that they've gone through all of this, and as you said, the orders seem to be unaffected, and you know, there's obviously been Boeing issues going back decades as well. I think does speak to how powerful their moats are. Just a duopoly kind of situation, cost advantage over smaller, makes it basically impossible for anyone to compete against them. But it also, when you get businesses in those situations where they can't really lose, that's when they get complacent, and that's when they cut costs and cut corners, and the quality of what they're delivering goes down. So that's kind of what happens when you have these industries where it's very expensive, very capital intensive. So you end up with just a couple of big players at the top, and sometimes they're great. And obviously Boeing has been a great part of the industry for many decades, but you do get complacency because they can't really lose. I mean, there hasn't been that many serious aviation accidents in a long time besides the two planes that Boeing killed, both entire planes, with a fault in their plane, and nothing happened. Like, they still get orders. They're still considered one of the second or the first, probably the first best airline manufacturer. They probably will continue to be. You know, in any other industry, you kill 500 people, I think you're probably done. So,
yeah,
you know, that's...
You're not wrong, Hamish.
I think that does speak to just the nature of the industry and, yeah, their competitive advantages. I say that, you know, it is positive for, you know, from an investor perspective, but it's not positive from a consumer perspective when it comes to safety.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, monopolies are great and they're terrible.
Yeah.
If you're a consumer, they're terrible. If you're an investor, they're great. Yeah. Yeah. If you own the monopoly, then that's beautiful for you. And yeah, exactly. I mean, even you can just look at R&D. Like, planes have really not changed at all for decades and decades and decades. Even though we know there are better, physics tells us there are better ways of building planes. There are, you know, better engines we can, like, this is nothing new. I think in a lot of the helicopters that are made today are still using engines that were first designed in the 50s and 60s.
Wow.
Because they just don't, yeah, because they just don't want to update them. And it's also because the regulatory process is hard to get a new engine approved. But yeah, it's crazy. R&D is not that strong in the aerospace industry.
Yeah.
We need SpaceX to come in and start making passenger planes. Yeah. That'd be cool. I'll catch the SpaceX rocket to London.
Yeah. It'll have full self-driving. I guess planes already have that.
Full self-flying.
I was going to say autopilot, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, they already have that.
I've got a great idea.
That's pretty funny. Anyway. Yeah, I've got a genius idea, Hamish. Anyway, that's the shakeup happening at Boeing. There's quite a few management changes, so we'll have to see what happens there and whether it actually makes any difference or whether it just adds to the confusion and mishaps.
Yeah.
All right, Hamish, that is it for today. They are our news topics of the week. If you have any news topics, definitely let us know. Let us know in the Spotify question box. Let us know in the YouTube comments. Love hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, as always.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks very much for tuning in, guys. Really appreciate it. And thanks, Hamish, as always, for joining me.
No worries.
With that said, we're going to bounce out of here. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.